people are worried, people are fearful, and it's almost like this slow motion trauma that's happening for Canadians of not knowing what the future is going to look like and what they should plan for. And that collective fear and worry and anxiety is impacting so many people right now. And feeling powerless, confused, and gaslit are very common felt emotions right now, which can be very confusing. And Canadians are worried.
Hi, welcome to the Growth Mixtape Podcast, and I'm your host, Bob Mathers. We have one rule here. We're going to chase our curiosity way outside our comfort zones. The more uncomfortable and awkward, the better. We're going to talk to people you've never heard of doing jobs you didn't know existed. We're going to hear human stories about the things that connect us, what we can learn from one another, and what we can take away to apply to our own lives. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first, but just like songs on a mixtape, you create something memorable and emotional. Today we talked to Stephanie Peachy, a therapist and mental health advocate, about what's been called Trump anxiety. Now, whether it's tariffs or rhetoric around Canada becoming the 51st state, Canadians are feeling betrayed, bullied, and pissed off. And it's taking a dramatic toll on our mental health. I wanted to have this conversation because I have dear friends in the US, customers, partners, and this is an elephant in the room I've been avoiding. I don't even like having the conversation with my Canadian friends because it's so emotionally charged. And at work, we're told never talk politics. But here's the thing, this is not a political issue. It's deeply personal and it affects everyone differently. I'm recording this intro 4 days after Stephanie and I spoke, and there have already been two major changes in Trump's position on tariffs. So if you think this will calm down, it won't. Nobody is coming to save us. The current chaos of the day will simply be replaced by something else because that's what bullies do. And whether you like it or not, dealing with uncertainty and the anxiety people are feeling is a core competency you need to build. Stephanie gives us language for how we're feeling and practical steps we can take to take back some control in our lives and feel less powerless. We also talk about the power of collective experiences like concerts and sports that bring us together and remind us that we're all better than this. Please enjoy Stephanie Peachy. Stephanie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
So we got connected through my amazing producer, Amy. And when she initially proposed you as a guest and this topic for conversation, I'm like, I don't know. But I've been trying to lean into my curiosity and awkward conversations, which is kind of what we're here to do. And the reason that it was a bit awkward for me is this is something that I actively try to put boundaries around and don't talk about in my life. You've been on lots of podcasts. You talk about counseling, divorce, separation, co-parenting, but you were recently interviewed by a journalist to talk about this anxiety that a lot of Canadians feel around Trump and tariffs and 51st state rhetoric, etc. And I'm curious how that came about, because if people listening to this go on, do what I did and search you on Spotify, you'd find lots of amazing conversations around the things that you do for a living, but this doesn't exactly fit in there. But I'm really curious about how that conversation came about.
Yes, you're right in that my area of expertise is intimate partner violence, and I've been very outspoken about that. And I do a lot of work in separation and divorce. So those are areas I'm very comfortable talking about. With that said, my role is in mental health. And the reality is what's happening politically right now, which is more than politics, and we'll talk about that a little bit, is that everything's impacting individuals' mental health right now. And mental health is really what my area overall of expertise is. And we wrote a blog post about exactly how Canadians were feeling. And it was interesting, but not overly surprising how much attention it got, because we really worked to speak to the lived experience of Canadians right now. And it garnered a lot of attention because I think it resonated with so many people. Mental health and what's happening right now are very well linked together.
Yes. And I'm wondering too, is it too much of a leap that there are some parallels between intimate partner violence and what's going on? Because it does feel a bit like bullying. And I certainly don't want to, you know, trivialize people in actual violent relationships, but there do seem to be some parallels that are interesting there.
There are some parallels, and I'm glad that you connect those pieces, because this experience right now is very emotional for many Canadians. And well, yes, and I'm glad that you say, you know, not to minimize the experience of primarily women who are involved with intimate partner violence, but people are feeling very bullied. There's a lot of gaslighting happening. People are feeling very dismissed. It feels like the rules of life keep changing, and we're confused and we don't know what to believe. And many people feel like they're living in survival mode, which can be very similar to the trauma of intimate partner violence and unhealthy relationships, of feeling like there's this bully and there's so much unpredictable behavior that people are worried, people are fearful. And it's almost like this slow motion trauma that's happening for Canadians of not knowing what the future is going to look like and what they should plan for. And that collective fear and worry and anxiety is impacting so many people right now, and feeling powerless. I mean, that's such a big part of unhealthy relationships, whether it be intimate partner violence or other types of relationships. But feeling powerless, confused, and gaslit are very common felt emotions right now, which can be very confusing. And Canadians are worried.
Yeah, the part of this conversation that's uncomfortable for me is that I kind of alluded to it earlier. I've actively decided that, you know, spending a lot of time thinking about this, consuming content, has a impact on me that I don't like. It changes how I show up with my family and friends and the people that really matter to me. And so it's something that I'd prefer not to talk about, but I also know that shoving this down and burying it probably isn't the right answer either. And I don't know what's so uncomfortable about it. You talk about bullied, and I do think there's some triggers back to my early adolescence. And I think lots of people have stories like that. But I don't know, is it shame? Is it embarrassment? Is it fear? How would you describe how people are feeling?
Well, and it's interesting that you talk about that feeling of I shouldn't be talking about this, right? Or it's political. And I think what we have to recognize is that, yes, there's a political piece to it, but overall, I don't categorize what's going on as political. It feels deeply personal that it crosses party lines. It's not about which party you belong to or who you vote for, although, of course, that's a piece of it. But that sense of, you know, keep your personal views and reflections to yourself, keep your political beliefs to yourself, don't start that conversation. But it's so much more than that. And we have to stop following those rules of, you know, don't talk about politics at work and keep it to yourself, because ultimately we're human. And this is something that's impacting our stress levels, our sleep, our view of how safe the world is, how we envision our futures, potentially, depending, you know, on what aspect of this crisis, I'll call it, we're looking at. There's real fear there of, you know, the talk of the 51st state, the tariffs, the, you know, if you're a business owner, it impacts people in different ways, but it's impacting everybody ultimately. And it's not something that we have to shy away from. It's something that is okay to talk about. Obviously, as a mental health therapist and as a social worker, I have very strong opinions about how people are to be treated. And I like to believe that others feel the same way, which is not always the case, unfortunately. But this is, so many of these pieces are human rights issues, and we do have to speak up about them.
You've hit on a couple of really important things, including this idea that we don't talk about politics at work. I remember the first time I learned that lesson the hard way. I think a George W. Bush was in the White House. So that tells you how long ago that was. And I was working with a client down in Texas, and I think he was on the cover of Rolling Stone as the worst president in US history. I made light of it. It didn't go over well. And so ever since then, I've sort of definitely shied away from it. But even in preparation for this conversation, I had the opportunity to talk to some people. And here are a couple of things I've learned. You've talked about the tariffs and the 51st state stuff. I think those two things are very different. You know, the tariffs how it affects your job. I talk to people in manufacturing, like it's upended their lives, and it's personal, but it's more economic. This 51st state thing is deeply personal, and it's the stuff that really gets people upset. And if somebody eventually gets punched in the face, it'll be because of that, not tariffs.
Yeah. And it is deeply personal. There's so many aspects that go into how somebody is viewing this threat of, and, you know, sometimes we chalk it up to what a silly idea, it will never happen. But at the same time, we keep seeing so many things happening that we thought, well, that would never happen. And so we've opened up this door or pathway to the what if. And I think we've been forced to face some of our greatest fears of what if this actually did happen? What if all of these, you know, quote, silly things that have come out of this bully's mouth were to be true? And again, our sense of safety has been completely rocked. And, you know, things like tariffs, you know, we talk about the impact on consumers day to day, but even this morning I had a board meeting, a breakfast meeting, and sat beside somebody who was talking about the uncertainty of his business and where he gets his parts. And he has a young child and a partner, and, you know, just that safety of personal life and income and, you know, supporting the community becomes very challenging. And so there are so many pieces that go into this. And again, the experience for any individual might be different in terms of where their future focus is and what their fears and anxieties are about. But underlying it is this, again, mental health impact that I think everybody's collectively experiencing to some degree of fear and concern and feelings of not being safe, which ultimately triggers a trauma response for us that has to be dealt with.
Okay, so there are a couple of really interesting things you hit on there, Stephanie. Coming back to this idea of, I guess it's not just necessarily politics at work, but I know that, for example, I've got a friend and he's his son plays baseball, Division I baseball down in the States. And so he goes down and spends time with people. And he says the response that he gets from people down there kind of are in two buckets. He said people are either deeply apologetic or they sort of joke about it. And I've talked to other people about this as well. And, you know, the people that, for example, are joking about it, like they could be friends. They're not cruel people. They might not even support the administration. They just don't understand how deeply personal this is. And it's, we can't expect them to. Like, it's such a unique, novel feeling for us to feel, as you say, unsafe. So how can we have those conversations when we're talking to people that don't really understand what this feels like for us?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, because there's so many key pieces, I think, that would go into how to have that conversation. And I think, so checking in with yourself and recognizing how it's impacting you is very important, because when you're with people who do joke about it, and you're right, I think that comes from a place of just not sharing in the same experience, and that's okay. Everybody's experience around this is going to be unique. And so first is to make sure that you don't question your experience of it. You know, acknowledging your feelings and acknowledging what it's bringing up for you is really important, and not forcing yourself to change or let go of that. We say, you know, you have to name it to tame it. And it sounds sort of silly, but really naming the experience for yourself is important, and being mindful that others will have different viewpoints on this. But I think it's very important that we decide where we spend our energy. We are not going to convince everybody around us to feel the exact same way that we do, or to share in certain political views or views of human rights, or the how we're viewing the likelihood of some of these things actually happening. So being selective or intentional with who you're having conversations with, I think, can be very important. So you're not left feeling like your viewpoints or your feelings are invalidated, right? Where somebody's just saying, don't be ridiculous, that's so silly, or, you know, maybe it would actually be great if you were the 51st state. Think about all these things. Know who your like-minded friends are, family members. There may be people that you say to yourself, I just need to avoid this conversation because the headache that's going to come from it is going to be far too stressful than it's worth. And so I think we have to be cautious and really protective of ourselves, of who are we engaging in these conversations with and what energy will we then have to spend on having this discussion.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's something I could do a much better job at, because in absence of that kind of thoughtful approach, Stephanie, I just avoid it with everyone. Because I do, you know, if you go to a cocktail party or a dinner party, this conversation gets heated very quickly. And it's just not enjoyable. So I wonder, any advice for how that might work in the workplace for leaders that are trying to project kind of confidence to their teams and their customers when they don't necessarily believe it?
Yeah, I think that is a very difficult conversation to have, because as a leader, your role is very different, of course. As a leader, you want to project confidence, you want to reassure people. So I think you do have to talk about it to a degree, but again, very intentionally. And so if you're a leader in whatever industry you're in, is being mindful that the lived experience of individuals has changed in some capacity. So for those potentially in an industry where tariffs are an ongoing threat, and everybody knows that this is going to change the business if these do come into place, name that for people. You don't have to go down the path of, you know, this leader is ridiculous, or we should do this politically, or who are you going to vote for to fight against this, but rather to say, this is a looming concern. Let's have a conversation about it, and let's validate the feelings that you have with that. And being a leader in projecting confidence doesn't mean you have to have all the answers, but you have to be able to say that this is something I'm aware of, and I'm aware of the impacts, and can we have conversations about maybe the stress load, about how it's impacted your day to day, and how can we adjust how we do business or your routine or your needs so that we're addressing, again, it's that underlying piece of mental health and stress and anxiety that leaders have to tune into without, again, going into those political conversations that, and you know, it sounds like you have a very good boundary of being able to say, I know these conversations exhaust me. I don't want to be a part of them. Whereas others go, yes, let's go toe to toe, right? I could debate this all day. And so I think as a leader, making sure that you're addressing the needs of your team without going down that rabbit hole, and making sure that you are role modeling good boundaries about what conversations are going to be acceptable while still supporting your team in what their needs are in that moment.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, Stephanie, but I think being more proactive about this and having those conversations proactively, because whatever fear, uncertainty, doubt, this feeling of powerlessness that you're feeling, everybody's feeling it, and ignoring it is going to create problems down the road. One of the things I've been talking to leaders about, this uncertainty is the norm. Like you talked about it earlier, the things that we thought were insane in the first time around with this administration are just normal now. So things are going to escalate. We might look back on this time and go, remember when our biggest problem was 10% tariffs on steel and aluminum? And it's going to get worse. Nobody's coming to save you. And figuring out a way to manage in this environment is kind of got to be a core competency that people and leaders have to build.
Yes, you're exactly right. And, you know, again, what's happening has opened up this door. And this is what we're talking to individual clients about all the time, is they're saying, well, if this is possible, then what if this? And what if this? And what if this? And, you know, in therapy, we often talk to clients about, you know, irrational thoughts or irrational worries. Where has your thinking led you astray, basically? And how can we pull that back? You know, in terms of this topic, there's really become no limit on what might be possible. And so they're no longer irrational thoughts. They're real fears for people. And our work is to help them manage the feelings that come up with that. But we're not getting rid of it. We're just really about managing these pieces. And so from a leadership perspective, I think it is very important to have transparency and to shift away from just talking about strategy and really opening the door to some of these emotional conversations, which can be very difficult in some industries because it's just not something that's talked about, right? You go into work, you put your head down and you get things done. But starting to have conversations with the team about those what ifs and addressing them in a way that says, no, I'm not confident how this is going to go, but we are on top of it. And here's what we're doing. And if A, then we will do this. If B, then we have a plan for that. But we are going to work at this together and prepping them for how to manage, you know, these conversations, whether it be with customers, how to respond to questions. And so that confidence comes through of we're managing it without knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Hey, it's Bob, and I'm taking the Growth Mixtape on the road in a series of keynote speeches inspired by the stories of my amazing guests. At their core, these signature talks are about how to get you and your teams off autopilot and stop settling for small incremental improvements. This isn't going to come from spewing business advice. My podcast is full of people that have done incredible things, and every one of them struggles with self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and the crippling fear of judgment that holds so many of us back. They've also found ways through it by rediscovering their creativity, their curiosity, and the confidence to do scary things. Imagine the power of bringing these vulnerable stories to life, live and on stage, to help you and your teams hit your targets, find your voice, and be the rock stars you are. Book me for your next event at bobmathers.ca. Now back to the show. You talked earlier about feeling powerless, like these little things we can do to feel like we have some control instead of just reacting to, you know, the next thing that's going to happen in the news today.
You know, it's such a buzz term, but self-care is so critical right now. People think about self-care as like, I have to book myself a spa day and go away for two nights and all of this, but I have children and self-care can be moment to moment. And I think really staying in tune and on top of how you're feeling and acknowledging it. If you're having a lot of anxiety and watching the news, pay attention to that. If you have a lot of worries about your finances, tune into that. You know, as a woman and as a mother of four, but two of them being girls, you know, my mind goes into the future about women's rights and their safety. I think about, you know, those that we support and clients that feel so invalidated for being who they are, whether they're trans or a newcomer or, you know, identify as a person of color and their experience feeling completely ignored and that they're second class citizens. And so we have to really tune into what our individual emotional experiences are and find ways to cope and to consider what do we have in our control, which feels very minimal at times. You know, for me, one thing I did is I took my children grocery shopping and I said to them, we're going to look for all of the maple leaves. We're going to look for all the things that are made in Canada. And I taught them about how are we going to look for this and what does it mean and why are we doing it? And, you know, being able to say in this moment, I selected this product over this, and that was a choice I made. That was in my realm of control. Paying attention to what's happening for you today is very important. When we live in fear and we have a lot of anxiety, those are very future thinking things. We're always thinking about what if, what if, what if. And we want to be mindful that we're not allowing the days to pass by just waiting for the next big event to happen. We need to stay grounded in today and to focus on what do I need to do today to take care of myself, to take care of my family, to do my job well, while also sprinkling in some of those pieces of how can I support the cause, if you will, wherever you land on things, but where, you know, can I do something as simple as share that Instagram post that is supporting Canadian products? Can I share that Instagram post about, you know, what this leader in Canada, or even not leader, but maybe small business is doing that's just saying, this is how we're supporting Canada right now, and feeling like you're a part of the solution without being able to make all of the changes, because ultimately we are, you know, powerless to a degree in the sense of we're not all going to Washington and creating policy change, but finding ways that you can feel like you are supporting your belief system while also caring for yourself. It's so cliche, but getting good sleep, eating good foods, moving your body, these are all things that are incredibly important to support our mental health and to support our ability to continue on day to day to do the things that make us who we are and enjoy the lives that we've built for ourselves.
So there's a couple of things I really liked about that, Stephanie. One is the whole analogy around putting on your own oxygen mask before anyone else's, right? So as people and as leaders, really taking to heart those things you talked about to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves before we can take care of anyone else. And I want to come back to that in a second. The other thing that you talked about, you know, these little things we can do to exercise some control and feel less powerless. It reminds me of, I don't know, it's recency bias. I was listening to a conversation with a Navy SEAL talking about uncertainty and this idea of shifting horizons. And as you can imagine, the insane situations that the SEALs are trained for. But as fear and uncertainty goes up, you need to have, they call it shifting horizons, and set yourself small goals like that are really short term, because you need to get that dopamine hit. They're like, oh, okay, I can do things. And then you pick another one and get another dopamine hit. And that's what creates momentum and gives you a sense of control. And so maybe it is going to the grocery store. This feeling of what's going to happen this quarter and whether I'm going to be able to, you know, hit my sales targets or pay my mortgage, that is paralyzing. But I can go to the store and choose today to buy Canadian products. And that feels like I'm making progress.
Absolutely. And I think that is so critical because it really is that, you know, a feeling of control in an uncontrolled situation and doing things that make you feel good, whether they be related to this circumstance or not, but things that feed you, right? As we're individuals and we have things that we love to do and still taking the time to do that and feeling powerful to a degree, right? Is outside of this as well. We want our clients to feel powerful. We want them to feel like they have choice in their life. I once upon a time was a runner and I'm trying to get back into it. But you know, the feeling that you have after a good run and feeling, you know, you're on a high bleeds into other parts of your life. It's not just about those, you know, that half hour you spend running a 5K. It's about those good feelings that then allow you to move on to the next step of your life. Because life is still happening around us. And I think that's such an important thing to remember is, you know, even though there's this big elephant in the room that we're dealing with, there's still life that's happening, right? My six-year-old still had to return her library books to school today and we had to find them this morning. And, you know, while sad, my family recently had a death in the family and it was horrible. And so like, my point being that life is still happening around us. We still have these things going on. And so I can do these small things while also continuing to focus on my life and the things in it and managing all the other pieces that might come up, because that's life.
Wow, I love that. You've talked about some things around mental health, eating good foods, getting sleep. I know those seem really basic, but I can tell you I am not myself when I don't get a good sleep. And so I know it's simple. That doesn't mean we always follow these rules. So you've talked about those things. What are some other things that you think people really need to be focused on in the day-to-day and small changes they can make to give them back that sense of control?
I mean, one of the things that to me is incredibly obvious, but I think people aren't always good at is monitoring their intake of information. I think that's very, very important. You know, working in the field, there's so many pieces around supporting mental health that are so commonplace for me. And every now and then I have clients that what to me are the very simplest things that we can do are is a brand new information for clients. And it shocks me. And I forget sometimes because I'm around very like-minded people all the time. And my husband works in mental health and I have a whole team of therapists here. So these things are very commonplace. But I think for those that haven't necessarily tuned into their emotional experiences before, to how their surroundings impact their emotional experience, it's very important, you know, another buzzword, but being mindful. And mindful being not, you know, doing a 30-minute meditation, because that's not realistic for a lot of people, but being mindful and really observing yourself in your day-to-day of, when am I experiencing difficult feelings? What is my best time of day? What are things that throw me off kilter that maybe seem good in the moment of, you know, we're all guilty of hitting that one more episode at 11 o'clock at night. And then the next day we think, oh, I'm so tired. Why am I so tired today? How much am I scrolling through Instagram? What accounts am I following? How do they make me feel? How often am I watching the news? What station do I turn on to watch the news? All of these pieces to tune into, to really get a sense and evaluate what is impacting you in your day-to-day that maybe needs a little bit of a closer look. Unfollow some of those accounts on Instagram. Unfollow. These do impact you. And I think, again, when we don't tune into how we're supporting our mental health day-to-day on a really micro level, it has great impacts. And so doing sort of that evaluation, doing that, you know, observation of yourself in your day-to-day and say, where do I need to make some changes that would support me in this? And I think that's, again, where we have some power and control for ourselves that can make really big differences. You know, setting that bedtime reminder for yourself, shutting off your phone at night, you know, drinking less coffee. That's not something I'm going to do, but for some people, right? And, you know, did I drink water today? It's that simple. But all of these things, you know, mental health isn't this one thing that we can say, do this and you'll have good mental health, right? Even with therapy, we love that people come to therapy, but we are often saying to our clients, at the very most, I'm with you for 1 hour a week. What are you going to do in all of those other hours that you have that's going to also support you? Because I can't make all the changes in that 1 hour. Wish I could, but I say to my clients all the time, I have no magic beans to give you. I have tools. I have conversation. I can explore things, but the day-to-day of how we treat ourselves is massively impactful.
So having you recount that, there's a couple of things that come to mind. One, I love the idea of this kind of tuning in, and it doesn't have to be hard. There was an app, you don't need an app, but there was an app that did this, and it would basically prompt you every, I don't know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and it would just ask you, how are you feeling right now and what's going on in your life? Like, it would take you 15 seconds every, let's say it's 30 minutes. And you do that for 3 or 4 days. And you very easily see, oh, when I'm scrolling through social media, I'm feeling this way. Or when I, you know, I'm taking my phone to bed before I go to sleep, it makes me feel this way. And it's just a very quick and easy way of tuning into what's bringing you energy and what's sapping your energy. This idea of, you know, the screen time. And I want to talk about that for a second, because Instagram is free. We pay for it with our attention, our focus, and negative news travels 9 times faster on the internet than positive news. Like, it's the most unhealthy thing in the world. There's a direct correlation between how much time you spend on social media and your mental health. We know that, but it's just the default. It's like, oh, I've got 5 minutes before my meeting. I'll pick up my phone and scroll through Instagram and see what's happening. And even if you try to focus on, follow on only positive things, that's not what the algorithm wants. It's going to start feeding you negative shit because it can't make money on a bunch of people feeling good about themselves.
Oh, and you're completely right. And I think it's stepping back as well and looking at the systems that we're a part of and what their intentions are. And again, that's something that I don't think a lot of people tune into. You know, news is meant to grab your attention. There's always an intention and an investment behind what we're looking at, right? Is whether it's to give a certain message, whether it's to have you buy something, every bit of news that we consume, to a degree, there's some bias in how it is presented. And so we have to make sure that we are filtering through what we're consuming and really paying attention to how it is impacting us. People are feeling a lot of pressure right now that I need to be informed. I need to be informed. I need to stay on top of what's happening. If it's impacting you really negatively, though, my answer to clients is simply, no, you do not. You do not have to know every single piece of what's going on. That is not your duty. Your job is to support yourself. And so, yes, being mindful, and I think back to, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but you know, I grew up without social media. And so I think about where time used to be spent. We are very horrible now at sitting quietly with our thoughts. Because you're right. And I've caught myself. I will close Instagram and without even thinking it, I've reopened it. I go, how did I get here? And I realize it's just so automatic that we do this. We are captivated with things all the time. But if we don't tune into what it is that we're giving our attention to and how it impacts us, we can end up in a lot of trouble. And so putting your phone down, being with your thoughts, standing quietly in an elevator, that's okay. We're not very good at doing that these days because it's just consumption, consumption, consumption. And we need to be mindful of how that impacts us.
Yeah, I remember I was thinking about that too. I was remember like when I used to go to take the school, be on the city bus to school, I don't know, it was 20 minutes. I would sit there and stare at the same ad and just read it and reread it and just stare at, you know, trying to make eye contact. Like, what on earth did I do? And I was waiting at a restaurant. I was meeting somebody for lunch a while ago, and I got there early, and I purposely put my phone away, and I just sat there in the booth by myself in a crowded restaurant. I looked like a serial killer. Like, I was just sitting there staring straight ahead. I could feel people looking at me like, what is this maniac doing? What is he planning? That's how foreign it felt.
Yeah. And you're right. Is people don't do that anymore. And I think those moments of quiet can be so healthy for us. And regardless of whether people were looking at you or whether there was an insecurity that your mind was saying, they're staring at you, they're worried, regardless of that, but to be able to just sit quietly, notice what comes up for you, look around the room. What do you see? What do you hear in a restaurant? What do you smell? Enjoying just being in the moment. Because I do think that this, you know, it links with that feeling of productivity that we have of every moment needs to be scheduled and be getting things done. And I'm certainly guilty of that. I mentioned I have 4 young children. I have a big job. I have a partner. I have 2 dogs. I have a very busy life. Within that, I need to care for myself sometimes, which is a struggle. But that feeling of needing to fill every moment with something becomes very problematic, especially when a part of that something is consuming negative information. It's exhausting, and there can be a lot of burnout with that. And learning to just sit still with your thoughts or observe the world around you can be incredibly helpful. And I say to clients all the time, rest is productive. It's not lazy. It's not, you know, that you're unmotivated to do something. You deserve to rest, and you don't have to earn it. You don't have to wait until you're completely burnt out to say, okay, now I need to rest. All of these things are working together to impact our physical health, our mental health. And so I love that. Go to a restaurant and very intentionally say, I'm just going to put my phone down.
Yeah, it was weird. I do love this idea. Sometimes I do it on a run or a walk. Like, how can I engage all 5 senses at once? And because it's not natural anymore. So a couple things I just wanted to come back to. How do you manage the screen time? So a couple of things that I've found, and I just love to get your perspective on this. So I haven't been on Facebook in years. I used to be on Twitter, but then I removed it from my phone and I only allowed myself to go on it on my computer. So even though I didn't have it on my phone, I'd still probably go on it 6 times a day between meetings. And recently, all I did was go into Chrome and removed my pass my password because it's been so long since I logged in. I have no idea what it is. And that just that little bit of friction means I haven't been on Twitter in 6 months. So it's just making it a little bit harder. Sometimes it's deleting it from, you can even just delete the, you can have the app on your phone, but just take it off your home screen. So you have to go search for it. These little things that just introduce a little more friction that eventually you'll be like, yeah, it's not worth it. I slowly wean myself off these things.
Yeah, I think those are all really good tools to use. And I think for anybody who is questioning their consumption of social media is, I'm always mindful of why are your goals your goals? Are they your goals because society tells you they should be your goals? I use the example of running with clients all the time, but I'll say to them, if I told you right now that your new goal is to be able to run a 10K, but you hate running, how likely are you to meet that goal? And they go, I'm not going to meet that goal at all. Exactly, right? I have no desire to be an astronaut. So if somebody told me that I have to train to be an astronaut, chances are I'm not going to succeed at that goal. So we have to make sure that any goals we're setting for ourselves are truly personal goals that we really do want to achieve, like really honestly achieve. So social media is an interesting one because some will say, yes, I have to cut back on social media. And I'll say to them, so tell me about why. What is the motivation behind doing something like that? And if they're recognizing it has a negative impact on my life, it makes me feel like crap all the time. It makes me see all the things that I don't have, but I want, or whatever the case may be, it's, you know, I'm scrolling late at night and I'm just, you know, I'm doom scrolling. I'm just looking for all the bad news that's happening. That's where some of those strategies could be really helpful of how can you sort of force that limit on social media? What would it be like if you took it off your home screen and it just wasn't available all the time? All of these strategies, I think, can be very valuable. And usually I'll say to people, you know, give it a try for at least a little while, because one day is not enough to say it didn't work, I'm too tempted. See how it positively impacts your life over time and do some of those mood journals that you had mentioned before, because we use those in therapy. You can start to catch patterns, right? What time of day am I feeling this particular feeling more often? And then how can I address it? But putting real strategies in place to change your habits can be very helpful.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things that made the biggest difference to me was I don't take my phone to bed anymore. I bought an old school alarm clock, so I know what time it is and I can set an alarm if I need to, but my phone is downstairs. And, you know, the sleep hygiene, just think about the impact that being on social media, and I used to do that, like be on social media is my way to relax before I put my phone down and close my eyes for the night. And that's what I'm feeding my subconscious brain to dwell on, you know, for the 6 or 8 hours that I'm sleeping. So that made a huge difference. So I wanted to talk about, so something else, when you and I talked a couple of weeks ago, I had just gone to a concert. I saw Nathaniel Ratcliffe and the Night Sweats in Toronto with a bunch of my friends. It'd been the first time since before COVID I went to a big show like that. And there was no politics. There was just 20,000 people singing and dancing. And I got really emotional. I've forgotten how much I missed that, just that collective experience that we were engaged in. And I'm wondering how you think about that. Or example, we just had the Four Nations Cup where Canada beat US in the finals. It's like, more of that, please.
Yes, more of that. And I think it's the enjoying life and giving yourself permission to have fun in a way that's not so serious. Those things just, you know, even as you're talking about the concert, I got a little bit of a chill because I think about how it just feeds our souls to do these things. Because really what we're doing in those moments is mentally letting loose, right? We talk about letting loose as we're young and we go to parties and we just say, to hell with all the serious stuff, I'm just going to have fun. And that's what these moments give us. And it's that personal permission to say, I'm just going to enjoy myself. I'm going to let go of everything, whether it be the political landscape, the stress of work, the stress of home, my finances, all those things that we can be consumed with at all times if we choose to be. But the Four Nations Cup, I mean, that was a very personal win for Canadians. That was so symbolic of everything that's happening right now. And, you know, we're a hockey family. My son plays hockey. We are the family that times dinner with the Leafs game on Saturday nights. And it's family time. Whether or not everybody watches it is another case, but it is on. And so for so many Canadian families, that was just such a moment of Canadian pride and unity. And I think feeling united with other people right now, especially other Canadians for many, just feels really great. And a concert, although has maybe nothing to do with Canada per se, but you're having a shared experience with a lot of other people, and that feeling, that connectedness is so valuable. And it feeds us in a way that we're mentally taking a break from all other things and giving ourselves permission to just enjoy and be happy, like pure, genuine happiness. And I think building those things into life are really, really important.
That's so true. And, you know, the Four Nations Cup thing, even Paul Maurice, the coach of the Canadian team, talked about how afterwards Canada really needed this win. I don't even think many of us appreciated it at the time. You know, it was emotional, and it really brought people together and had this national sense of pride in a way that I don't think many of us have felt in a long time. Like, I don't even want to think about how different it would have felt if with everything else going on, we had lost that game. It would have been devastating.
Yeah. And I think you're right. He captured something deeper there, that we as Canadians needed that moment to feel unified and capable and proud, although we're certainly not all hockey players, but to really feel proud to be Canadian, you know, not just as individuals, but as a country. And it was, again, it's just so symbolic because hockey is so representative of Canada. And let's face it, our team was stacked. Like, it's so nice for people to recognize the talent that comes out of Canada. But it was beyond who these players are. It was a win that was felt nationally. And, you know, even for those that don't care about hockey, it was a moment of saying, like, we're here, we're strong, we're, you know, we're not going anywhere. And some people will say, you know, it's just hockey. Hockey doesn't matter. But these moments are so critical for Canadians, again, to feel that shared collective experience of strength, which I think that's what that tournament gave us.
This conversation has felt a lot like a therapy session, Stephanie. I don't know, maybe that's just because, you know, I'm sure people will listen to it. My friends will be like, Bob, what was with your like long rambling questions? You had the longest questions in this conversation than you've ever had before. You did more talking than you've ever had. And I was very aware of that, just something that I try not to do. But I just feel like, again, because I put a lot of those boundaries in place and don't talk about this stuff, even with my closest friends, I get the sense that a lot of this stuff was pent up, and you gave me a chance to release some of it with some really novel and tactical things that I can do to have a much healthier relationship with this topic.
And you have just nailed exactly what we do in therapy then, right? Is there's things that need to be opened up and explored and looked at and challenged and really managed as best possible. And that's a lot of people, you know, we still hear, oh, therapy, I'm not going to pay somebody to be my friend. And while I think we're very friendly and we love to build those relationships, therapy is not friendship. Therapy is about saying really what's happening for you. And let's take this next hour to delve into your experience and what needs to be examined and pulled out and what has been pent up that you feel like maybe you should be dealing with on your own or just doesn't deserve to get the attention that it needs. But it is important to talk about these things because, again, it's not just political. There's a big emotional experience that's happening. And that's really what we need to dig into.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, just in closing, I stole this question, I think, from maybe Tim Ferriss or somebody else. The billboard question. If you had a giant billboard and could put anything on it, a meme, a saying, a picture to put out in the world for millions to see, what would it be from Stephanie Peachy?
You know, I was glad you gave me this question early on because it's a lot to think about. And I went through a lot of options, but I landed on in our Burlington office, when you walk in on the wall, I very intentionally put a big, I guess, sign, or I don't even know what to call it, but it's, I guess, a giant sticker ultimately that was made. But it says, this is tough, but so are you. And I think I really wanted clients to see that when they come in and go out, of just that reminder of you are strong. There's always going to be something that can feel that this is tough, but so are you. And we can feel hopeless sometimes. We can feel uncertain, but we get through things. We get through. I mean, I was reflecting this morning, COVID was 5 years ago, and my brain sort of exploded. We got through that, and we never thought we'd shake hands with people again or attend in-person meetings. And we do. And we have all of these experiences. So reminding yourself that the strength that you have will always be greater than the things that you go through. And with the right strategy, supports, tools, you will get through hard things. And we as Canadians, we will get through this.
Man, that's beautiful. What a great mic drop closing. So for people that have heard and loved you, Stephanie, and heard some amazing things, want to learn more about you, where can they go?
Yeah, so our website is peachycounseling.ca. And we are also on Instagram at peachycounseling. So you're welcome to connect with us through the website, follow us on Instagram. We like to post a lot of information. We're certainly touching on this topic quite a bit lately. And everybody's always welcome to reach out. We service Ontario virtually, but we are in Burlington and Oakville.
I cannot thank you enough for this, Stephanie. This has been, I was a little anxious about it, cautiously optimistic. This has just been so much more enjoyable and thoughtful than even I had hoped. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.